Hello, everyone. Today we're going to go through the book of the Bible called the Song of Solomon. This is a very interesting book and has a lot of unique lessons that we all need to learn. And so let's get our Bibles and read along and learn what we can from this inspired book in God's holy word. The Song of Solomon was written by Solomon himself around 1000 BC, as far as we know. It pictures the true, genuine love between a husband and a wife. But there are also even bigger meanings and analogies that can be drawn between Jesus Christ and the church. So as we read this book, we want to make sure that we're learning lessons about marriage and the deep and sincere love that will grow and grow between a husband and a wife. And then we also want to extend that to understanding more deeply about the tremendous, intense love that exists between Jesus Christ and His church. I want to turn to one verse in the Bible that explains that. Let's go over here to Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 25. It says in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 25, "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it." There is the direct analogy. "That he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish." And so there's the clear scriptural example, and there are others we could go to that show the love that must exist between Jesus Christ and his church, and how the love that must exist between the husband and wife pictures that very clearly. And also, when you see the kind of love that is so clear between Christ and the church, you can apply that to the kind of love that ought to exist between husband and wife. So it's an intertwined analogy that we read about here in the Song of Solomon, picturing those two things. And so keep that in mind as we start here in chapter 1 and verse 1 of the Song of Solomon. "The Song of Songs, which is Solomon's, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. Because of the savor of your good ointments, your name is as ointment poured forth. Therefore do the virgins love you." In other words, the conduct and the reputation of the wife mentioned here is one that is very pleasant, like a good ointment. Verse 4, "Draw me or lead me away. We will run after you. The king has brought me into his chambers. We will be glad and rejoice in you. We will remember your love more than wine. The upright love you." Verse 5, "I am black." A better translation is, "I am dark, but comely or lovely, O you daughters of Jerusalem, as the tents of Kedar, as the curtains of Solomon." The tents of Kedar has an interesting little meaning. A little research seems to show that the tents of Kedar is referring to a nomadic Arab tribe, and Bedouin tents are made of black goatskin, very shiny and very bright and very beautiful. So the analogies as we read through here in describing his wife or her husband explain the words that are used. It's not just saying, well, you're beautiful and, well, you're handsome. But it shows in more detail how beautiful and how handsome, and therefore contributes to how much love they have for each other. Verse 5 actually should read, "I am dark, but lovely, O you daughters of Jerusalem, as the tents of Kedar," meaning beautiful and pleasant, "as the curtains of Solomon." Verse 6, "Look not upon me because I am dark, because of the sun." In other words, she had a deep tan. She worked outside. She was busy. She didn't just sit around doing nothing. And so she was tanned. "Look not upon me because I am dark, because the sun has looked upon me," or has tanned me, a better translation. "My mother's children were angry with me. They made me the keepers of the vineyards, but mine own vineyard have I not kept." Referring to family life and things that can go on there in a dynamic way between siblings as this young woman was growing up. But that didn't stop her from growing up, and that didn't stop her from loving her family and developing into a beautiful woman who loved her husband. Verse 7, tell me, O you whom my soul loves, where you feed, or where you feed the flocks, where you make your flock to rest at noon. For why should I be as one that turns aside by the flocks of your companions? I want to know where you are. I want to come see you. I don't want to stop and spend time with somebody else. I want to spend time with you. If you know not, O you fairest among women, go your way forth by the footsteps of the flock and feed your kids beside the shepherd tents. Kids meaning little goats. And notice he says, you fairest among women, carry out your responsibilities. And in the process, we'll be getting together. Verse 9, I have compared you, O my love, to a company of horses in Pharaoh's chariots. Another interesting note on that is, you know, Solomon had a lot of commerce going on with other nations, and especially with Egypt and Pharaoh, and he had a thriving import-export trade in the horses and chariots for which Egypt was famous, and they got a lot of them from Solomon. You can read about that in 1 Kings chapter 10, 26 and 29. So all of the things that we're reading here in this song has a lot of cross-referencing and meaning. It's not just a lovely poem written by someone on a lovely spring day, which is how a lot of people picture this book. No, it goes much deeper than that. And it gets into Christian principles involved in a happy marriage and Christian principles involved in the relationship between Jesus Christ and the church. And it's certainly beautifully written. And the time frame and the setting in which it is written reflects on the greatness of God and his creation. So he talks about a company of horses in Pharaoh's chariots, and that ties in with the very thriving business that went on between Solomon and the king of Egypt. Verse 10, your cheeks are comely with rows of jewels, your neck with chains of gold. In other words, a woman who dressed beautifully and who complimented her appearance with a modest amount of jewelry and used it in the right way, not to draw attention to herself and not to be gaudy and all bedecked with it, but as a compliment to her beauty and to her modest but well-groomed appearance. We will make you borders of gold with studs of silver, ornaments of gold with studs of silver. While the king sits at his table, my spikenard sends forth the smell thereof. This just refers to ointment and perfume, once again, that's used in the appropriate way and in the right amount, and containers of it as part of being beautifully dressed and well-groomed. And talking about how pleasant this wife is and this woman is, and comparing it to the pleasantness of the aroma of perfume and nice ointment. Verse 13, a bundle of myrrh is my well-beloved unto me. Now she's talking about the husband and how much she loves him. And you can see how we are noticing a dialogue going on here. Sometimes a woman is talking about how much she loves the husband and how handsome and how wonderful he is to her. And sometimes the husband is talking about the beauty of the wife and how splendid and how lovely she is to him. And that's true when it comes to Jesus Christ and the church. We worship him, we glorify him, we submit to him, and we yield to him. And he is glorified and he's wonderful and we love him intensely. And he talks about his beloved church and his little flock and how much he loves his people. So much so that he even died for us. And that's intense love. It's undying love. It's love that cannot be diminished, but rather grows and grows and grows. It involves respect. It involves admiration. Jesus Christ loves his church and loves how his church grows and overcomes and is pure and tries to do the right thing and tries to set the right example for everyone else. And the church worships Jesus Christ and glorifies him and looks to him and depends on him. Now, you don't want to take the analogy too far. In a marriage, neither husband or wife worship one another. But that intense love and respect and concern and care that is there between Jesus Christ and his church should and can exist between a husband and wife. The loyalty, the devotion, the service to one another through thick and thin, good and bad. Continuing now in verse 13, a bundle of myrrh is my well-beloved unto me. He shall lie all night between my breasts, or between my breasts. This, once again, is not dirty. Some people say this book is pornographic. That's totally ridiculous. This is talking about marriage. This is talking about the deep love that a husband and wife have in that marriage, which is sometimes physical, and it involves physical attraction and sexual relations. And that is something that's clean and wholesome and right between a husband and wife. It's private. It's personal. Any kind of sexual activity outside the marriage is dirty and wrong and brings horrible repercussions. But within the marriage, it brings a couple closer and closer together and expresses intense love one for the other. And the intense love depicts that kind of love between Jesus Christ and his church. And the husband and wife are attracted to one another's bodies in the right way, not in lust, but in love. And so that's what verse 13 is talking about. Verse 14, my beloved is unto me as a cluster of camphor in the vineyards of En-Gedi. You know, En-Gedi was really a wonderful place. I believe a little research will show you that it was a beautiful freshwater oasis close to the barren shores of the Dead Sea. It wasn't like the Dead Sea. The water there is not pleasant at all. It's full of salt and you can float in it, and I've done that. But this fresh water in En-Gedi, it's close to the Dead Sea, but not like the Dead Sea, was very pleasant and fresh and clean and wholesome. And that's the comparison here. My beloved is unto me as a cluster of camphor in the vineyards of En-Gedi. Behold, you are fair, my love, my companion. Behold, you're fair. You have dove's eyes. Behold, you are fair, my beloved. Yea, pleasant. Also, our bed is green. Or clean and right and good. The beams of our house are cedar, and our rafters are fir. Now, I thought of a scripture that I want to turn to regarding some of the descriptions here of marriage and between the husband and wife. It's found over here in Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 13. Notice here in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 2, marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled, clean and pure and right and wholesome, in marriage, based on love between husband and wife. But whoremongers and adulterers, God will judge. And that's sin outside of marriage. So as you see chapter 1 and you read it through, it's a beautiful passage of scripture. It can be written as a song. It can be recited kind of like you would a poem. But let's remember, it's actually inspired scripture, and it's unabashed and unashamed expressions of love in a marriage between husband and wife, and spiritually between Jesus Christ and the church, at a spiritual level, not at a physical level. Let's continue now in chapter 2, verse 1. This is the woman speaking here. I am the rose of Sharon and the lily of the valleys. If you've been to Israel, you'll know what the rose of Sharon is. You can get into the countryside and it's absolutely just gorgeous. And you do see roses and flowers and vineyards and rolling hillsides and green pastures with animals on them. And it's a very pleasant, beautiful sight to behold. Well, she said, I'm like that. As the lily among thorns, so is my love among the daughters. Now the husband is talking about the wife, and what an outstanding, upright, and precious, beautiful woman she is to him. As the apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among the sons. See, they're exchanging comments about one another. Husband about wife, wife about husband. So is my beloved among the sons. I sat down under his shadow with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. And there was physical contact going on, expressing love one to the other, which is right and good in marriage. He brought me to the banqueting house, to dinner, for instance, and his banner over me was love. And he gave me full attention, and he was so happy to have me there with him to enjoy that banquet and to, in a sense, show me off to the guests and present me as his love and as his wonderful wife. And I was glad to be there with him, my wonderful husband. And I think in a marriage, more of this ought to go on in terms of communication between husbands and wives. Doesn't have to do it in public to show off and draw attention to oneself and to just show out, but in private and between one another, the relationship in a happy marriage ought to involve communication. A lot of I love yous and a lot of you're beautiful and you're handsome and you're strong and I respect you and I want to take care of you and I want to serve you and so on. That ought to go on. And it does go on in some marriages and it adds to the happiness. But I'm afraid it doesn't go on in other marriages. It might go on before the couple gets married. But once they get married, it starts to get less and less. And finally, I've counseled many people in marriage situations, and sometimes they barely even talk to one another. And if they do talk, it's not pleasant. Well, I recommend that they pull out the Bible and open up to the Song of Solomon and learn some lessons here on how to communicate in a happy marriage. And don't hold back and make it sincere. And make it often. And it'll go a long way in developing an even happier marriage. God inspired these words. Why did he inspire these words? And why did he see to it that this book was put in his Bible for our instruction and for our admonition and for our understanding? He wants us to read this, and as it applies within a marriage and within our relationship in the church with Christ, learn from what we read and implement it in our lives. It's not just a pleasant poem and a lovely song. These are scriptures that are instructive if we'll read them and if we'll follow them and put them into practice in our lives, and especially in the Song of Solomon in our marriages. Especially when it comes to the Song of Solomon, put what we read here into practice in our marriages and then let it intensify our love for Jesus Christ. Of course, his love for us stays intensified. Verse 5, chapter 2. Stay me or refresh me with flagons. Comfort me with apples. For I am sick of love. Not that I am tired of it and I'm sick of it and I don't want any more of it. But my love is so strong, it's like being lovesick, if you know what I mean. You're not ill or anything, but it is a condition and a pleasant one and a good one. Verse 6, his left hand is under my head, his right hand does embrace me. They're showing affection to one another. I charge you, O you daughters of Jerusalem, by the roes or the gazelles and by the hinds of the field, the does, that you stir not up nor awake my love till he please. Leave him alone, let him alone, let him rest. Don't be bothering him. The voice of my beloved, behold, he comes leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills. And isn't it true that when two people really love one another, they love everything about them, including their voice? And the wife can hardly wait to see the husband when he comes home from work and to see him and to listen to him and to hear his voice and to watch him walk and just everything about him. That's what deep love is between two people that are married to one another, husband and wife, man and woman. And she loved his voice and he loved hers. Verse 9, my beloved is like a roe or a gazelle, a young hart. Behold, he stands behind our wall. He looks forth at the windows, showing himself through the lattice. He's coming close. He's finding his way to me. He's approaching me in my house, in my home, in our home, in our house. My beloved spoke and said unto me, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. Let's go do some things. Let's enjoy life together. Let's enjoy the surroundings. For lo, the winter is past. The rain is over and gone. And now we see a beautiful description of creation and of spring and all of the beauty and glorious, joyful manifestation that takes place in springtime. And there they were in love with one another. And he's saying, let's go enjoy this together. For lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone, the flowers appear on the earth, the time of the singing of birds has come, and the voice of the turtle is heard in our land. The voice of the turtle dove, a wonderful sound from a beautiful bird. The fig tree puts forth her green figs, and the vines with the tender grape give a good smell. Arise, my love, my fair one, come away, let's go enjoy it together, let's go for a walk, let's go on a trip, let's share all this together. Oh, my love, you are in the clefts of the rock, in the secret places of the stairs or of the cliff. Let me see your countenance. Let me hear your voice, for sweet is your voice, and your countenance is comely. You're out working. You're on the mountains. You're involved in taking care of responsibilities. I can hardly wait to see you. I can hardly wait to hear your voice. And you're at home and taking care of responsibilities. I can hardly wait to see you, and I can hardly wait to hear your voice. Your countenance is comely. Your appearance is lovely. She's saying to him, and he's saying to her. They exchange feelings to one another, and it goes back and forth, and sometimes they repeat things to one another. Take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes. I wanted to explain that a little bit. Sometimes a little research in a different translation explains it. It's really actually referring to jackals, apparently, and they can damage vineyards and they can damage blossoms. And when they do that, then there's not going to be any fruit. Verse 15 is simply saying, catch them, prevent them, these jackals, from spoiling the vines, and therefore preventing the wonderful fruit and grapes to blossom forth and produce wonderful wine. So as we're out in creation, as we're enjoying the spring, and as we're on an adventure, we can protect the vines as well and chase these animals off and even catch them if we have to. Verse 16, my beloved is mine, she says, and I am his. He feeds among the lilies. He feeds his flock among the lilies. And he's mine and I'm his. And we're not looking anywhere else. And we're not going to go anywhere else. But we're going to be faithful and loyal to one another. And we're going to take care of one another. And be with one another. And enjoy one another. And live life together. And love one another. You ever talk that way to your wife? You ever talk that way to your husband? These are words that ought to be exchanged often in a happy marriage. There's nothing embarrassing here at all. This is something that is right and good between husband and wife, man and woman, in a Christian marriage or in any marriage. And it's right here in the Bible. It's clean and wonderful and beautiful. Doesn't have to be broadcast around in front of a bunch of people in an audience, but between the two of you in private. There should be these kind of discussions that go on, expressing your love one for the other and describing what you mean and backing it up with action. And then as we think about Jesus Christ and the church, expressing our love for him. Do you ever tell Jesus Christ that you love him, that you deeply respect him, that you stand in awe of him? He tells us that he loves us and cares for us. We can learn many lessons from reading this book. Verse 17. Until the day break and the shadows flee away, turn, my beloved, and be thou like a roe or as a young hart upon the mountains of Bether. In other words, enjoy the relationship. Enjoy the time we have together. Let it be a time of rejoicing and of tremendous fun and wonderful affection and interesting adventure. That's what the description is actually saying. As you read verse 17. Now we come to chapter 3. Let's notice chapter 3 and verse 1. By night on my bed I sought him whom my soul loves. I sought him, but I found him not. I wanted to make sure he was there and we could love one another and care for one another and have a wonderful, peaceful sleep together. But I didn't find him. Where'd he go? I need to find out where he is. I miss him. Verse 2. I will rise now and go about the city and the streets, and in the broad ways I will seek him whom my soul loves. I sought him, but I found him not. The watchman that go about the city found me, to whom I said, saw you him whom my soul loves? It was but a little that I passed from them, but I found him whom my soul loves, and I held him, and I would not let him go until I had brought him into my mother's house and into the chamber of her that conceived me, or the room of her that conceived me. She's missing him. He got up and went somewhere, had to do something. She went out looking for him. She couldn't find him. And then she found him, and she wouldn't let go of him. She wouldn't depart from him and let him depart from her. She brought him back, and they came back home and spent time together. She goes on to say, verse 5, I charge you, O you daughter of Jerusalem, by the roes and by the hinds of the field, speaking of gazelles and does, that you stir not up nor awake my love till he please. As she said before, he needs to be left alone. He needs to have some peace. He needs to spend some time with me. He needs to be at home. And husbands need to be aware of that. Don't get so busy that you start neglecting your home life and your wife and your marriage. And the same is true with wives. Make sure you're allocating a lot of quality time for your husband and for your marriage. That's why you got married, after all, to spend time with one another and to enjoy life together. Don't let anything trump that or disrupt that or come between you and having that in your life. Verse 6, who is this that comes out of the wilderness like pillars of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, with all powders of the merchant? Behold his bed, which is Solomon's. 70 valiant men are about it, of the valiant of Israel. That doesn't mean in verse 6 that a man gets all perfumed up like a woman does. Men are masculine, and they should conduct themselves in a masculine way, and women are feminine, and they should conduct themselves in a feminine way. But it doesn't mean that the man, that the husband, shouldn't practice good hygiene. He should. And the woman practice good hygiene. She should. And so sometimes shaving lotion, something like that, deodorant, whatever, it's the man's choice. But just make sure that we are keeping ourselves in our appearance, including hygiene for our wife and for our husband. That's what verse 6 is talking about. Behold his bed, which is Solomon's. 70 valiant men are about it, of the valiant of Israel. He had guards all around him, King Solomon did. They all hold swords, being expert in war. Every man has his sword upon his thigh because of fear in the night. They have to protect the king. King Solomon made himself a chariot of the wood of Lebanon. And that kind of wood is very special. That's very famous cedar wood, which was imported to build the temple and palaces. So it's the best of wood, that wood from Lebanon, the cedars of Lebanon, for very high quality and excellent buildings. And Solomon made a special chariot out of it, kind of a portable enclosed chair, like a chariot, but was more like a coach that he would travel in. Verse 10, he made the pillars thereof silver, the bottom thereof of gold, the seat, the covering of it of purple, the midst thereof, or the interior, being paved with love for the daughters of Jerusalem, or by the daughters of Jerusalem. So he had a special vehicle here, and Solomon would go around in that in places and have guards around it, and he would probably take his wife with him from time to time. Verse 11, go forth, O you daughters of Zion, and behold King Solomon with the crown wherewith his mother crowned him in the day of his espousals, or his wedding, and in the day of the gladness of his heart. She was just pointing out to the people of Israel and to the women and others to just notice the splendor and the happiness and joy that King Solomon had when he obeyed God and he properly married and respected his wife, and the joy of the wedding to his wife. in the day of the gladness of his heart. Now we come to chapter 4. Chapter 4 and verse 1. Behold, you are fair, my love. Behold, you are fair. You have dove's eyes within your locks. Your hair is as a flock of goats that appear from Mount Gilead. Now, this right here, flock of goats, is not used loosely. It's really talking about the silky black coats of this outstanding breed of goats that gleam in the sun as they ripple over the hillside. And so, once again, just expressing the joy and the admiration and the love for the appearance of his wife is what this husband is doing here. This metaphor that we read about here is an expression of the love and of the admiration and of the attraction of the husband to the wife. When's the last time you told your wife how beautiful she is to you and how you love everything about her and the way she looks? She might say, oh, you don't mean that. Well, you do mean it. And she might not even respond, but she'll appreciate it. And when's the last time you told your husband how you were attracted to him and how handsome he is? And I've noticed in some marriages, the longer the couple is married, the less they do this. And finally, it's as though they don't really love the way they look anymore. Well, you know, the old saying, beauty is only skin deep, and it goes a lot deeper than the skin. But you do love them, and you do love the way they look, and you love their character, and you love their attitudes. But the thing is, do you tell them that? So often there is a lot of love in a marriage, but it's not expressed. So really, when you get down to it, love unexpressed is not fully the kind of love that ought to be there. Jesus Christ talks about how glorious his church is, and without spot, wrinkle, or blemish. And we know how Jesus Christ is glorified and perfected and brilliant in appearance. And we ought to tell him that from time to time in our prayers and tell God the Father that. And we see that example right here in chapter 4 and verse 1. Verse 2, your teeth are like a flock of sheep that are even shorn, which came up from the washing, whereof everyone bare twins, and none is barren among them. Just expressing the love of the various beautiful attributes and appearance of these two married people and how they feel toward one another in specific detail, and saying it privately, but saying it about their eyes and their hair and their teeth. Verse 3, your lips are like a thread of scarlet, and your speech is comely. And what you say is wonderful, and I love hearing it. Your temples are like a piece of a pomegranate within your locks. Your neck is like the Tower of David built for an armory, wherein there hang 1,000 bucklers or shields, all shields of mighty men. Your two breasts are like two young roes that are twins, which feed among the lilies. Not something that's dirty or nasty. God is the one who created the human body. But there are some things that are said in private and not in public, and not based on lust, but based on love, and between husband and wife in a happy marriage. And so that's what we read about here in verse 5. Verse 6, until the day break and the shadows flee away, I will get me to the mountain of myrrh and to the hill of frankincense. I'll spend time with you and enjoy you, and you can enjoy me, is what they're saying to each other. You are all fair, my love. There is no spot in you. And that's what Jesus Christ says about his church. He wants it to be a glorious church, without spot, wrinkle, or blemish, and filled with character and with humility and with wonderful attitudes. Well, that's what he's saying here to his wife, and that's what in other places she says to her husband. There's no spot and there's no blemish to your character, and your appearance is altogether lovely and beautiful to me and wonderful and very, very inspiring to me. They can exchange those kind of words, as you see right here in chapter 4. Come with me from Lebanon, my spouse, with me from Lebanon. Look from the top of Amana, from the top of Shinir or Sinir, and Hermon, from the lion's dens, from the mountains of the leopards. This is once again talking about some pretty powerful places here. And Sinir, I believe, is talking about Hermon. And that is the 9,000-foot mountain on the Israeli-Lebanese border. Very tall, dominating mountain that towers over the surrounding landscape and is capped with snow. What a brilliant sight it is, and I have seen that. And they're using that as an example of how brilliant and outstanding the appearance is of the wife and the husband to each other. And particularly here, it's the husband talking about the wife, but the wife also uses affectionate descriptions like this in talking about the husband in other places in this book, as we've seen. Verse 9, you have ravished my heart, my sister, my spouse. That wasn't literally his sister, but my woman, my mate, my spouse. You have ravished my heart with one of your eyes, with one look, with one chain of your neck. Perhaps she had a necklace around her neck. How fair is your love, my sister, my spouse? How much better is your love than wine, and the smell of your ointments than all spices? Your lips, O my spouse, drop as the honeycomb. Honey and milk are under your tongue, and the smell of your garments is like the smell of Lebanon. A garden enclosed is my sister, my spouse, a spring shut up, a fountain sealed. In other words, she's faithful, she's loyal. She's not loose and running around and being unfaithful, but she is absolutely loyal and completely committed to him and totally sealed and shut off from any other relationships with any other men, only her husband, and her husband only with her, his wife. A garden enclosed is my sister, my spouse, a spring shut up, a fountain sealed. Your plants are an orchard of pomegranates with pleasant fruits, camphor and spikenard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon, with all trees of frankincense, myrrh and aloes, with all the chief spices, a fountain of gardens, a well of living waters, and streams from Lebanon. See, just all kind of descriptions about pleasant and wonderful things. Instead of just saying, well, you're so pretty, you're so beautiful, I like you, well, spell it out sometime. Spell out pleasant things and compare it with how beautiful and wonderful she is, or handsome and wonderful he is. That's what's done here. A fountain of gardens, verse 15. A well of living waters and streams from Lebanon. Awake, O north wind, and come, you south. Blow upon my garden, that the spices thereof may flow out. Let my beloved come into his garden and eat his pleasant fruits. Come in and enjoy me, my company, my time, my thoughts, my speech, my appearance, and I will enjoy all of that in him as well. And as a married husband and wife, relish and be ravished by our love one for the other, which grows and grows and gets stronger and stronger with each passing year. And that's how it is with Christ and the church. We love Jesus Christ so much, and he loves us so much. And as we grow and overcome, that love intensifies and gets stronger and stronger with each passing year. The analogies are clear and solid and wonderful in this tremendous book of the Song of Solomon. Notice verse 15 of chapter 4. A fountain of gardens, a well of living waters, and streams from Lebanon. Verse 16, awake, O north wind, and come, thou south wind, blow upon my garden. In other words, make it refreshing, make it come alive, that the spices thereof may flow out. Let my beloved come into his garden and eat his pleasant fruits. Enjoy time with me, his wife. Now chapter 5 and verse 1. I am coming to my garden, my sister, my spouse, the husband says. I have gathered my myrrh with my spice. I have eaten my honeycomb with my honey. I have drunk my wine with my milk. Eat, O friends, drink, yea, drink abundantly, O beloved. Enjoy life, enjoy food, enjoy drink in moderation. Live the abundant life, have the abundant marriage. Verse 2. I sleep, but my heart wakens. It is the voice of my beloved that knocks, saying, open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my undefiled. Notice that. My undefiled, my clean, wholesome, pure one. For my head is filled with dew, and my locks with the drops of the night. I've been out working, or I've been out traveling, And now I'm home and I can hardly wait to see you. Open up and let me come in, please. Wake up. And she does, and she hears his voice. Verse 3, I have put off my coat. How shall I put it on? I have washed my feet. How shall I defile them? I have relaxed. I'm home. I don't want to have to leave now. My beloved put in his hand by the hole of the door, or by the latch or the opening. And my bowels were moved for him. My heart yearned for him is a better translation. I rose up to open to my beloved, and my hands dropped with myrrh. I was coming alive. It was getting exciting now that he's home. I'm excited about it. And my fingers with sweet-smelling myrrh upon the handles of the lock. I opened to my beloved, but my beloved had withdrawn himself and was gone. My soul failed when he spoke, or my soul went out to him when he spoke. I sought him, but I could not find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer. In other words, he was here, and I went to let him in, and by the time I got there, he was gone. He wanted to see me. I wanted to see him. So now I've got to go look for him. I sought him, verse 6, but I could not find him. I called him, but he gave me no answer. Verse 7, the watchman that went about the city found me. In other words, in the city at night, there were police, as it were, on patrol, watching out for the security of the streets and the buildings in the city. And when she went out at night to look for her husband, they were out there. The watchman that went out about the city found me. They smote me. They wounded me. The keepers of the walls took away my veil from me. I don't know if this was a matter that they thought she was a criminal, or if they thought she shouldn't be there, or if some of them were criminals themselves and assaulted her. I don't know. But there was some harm done to her, as we see in verse 7. Verse 8, I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, that you tell him that I am sick of love. I'm willing to go out there, even if I come upon dangerous situations, as apparently she did with some of the watchmen, as related in verse 7. She still wanted to be with her husband so intensely that she took that chance. And there was some problems as a result of it. It didn't say that she was sexually assaulted or anything, but maybe it was done by mistake. Maybe there was a criminal committing criminal acts. But she went through all that because she wanted to be with her husband, and he came there to be with her. And what this says is their love was so strong that they went through a lot in order to be with one another. And sometimes there were problems that they had to overcome in order to be with one another and relish one another's company. Verse 8, I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, that you tell him that I am sick of love, that I am lovesick, that I am longing for him. Verse 9, what is your beloved more than another beloved, O you fairest among women? What is your beloved more than another beloved, that you do so charge us? They are challenging her, some of her friends, and maybe neighbors are saying, why are you so smitten with this man? Why are you so taken with him? Why do you want to be with him so much? What's so special about him? And then she answers, verse 10, my beloved is white and ruddy, the chiefest among 10,000, distinguished. His head is as the most fine gold. His locks are bushy and black as a raven, wavy. And she describes the attraction she has for him. His eyes are as the eyes of doves by the rivers of waters, washed with milk and fitly set. His cheeks are as a bed of spices, as sweet flowers. His lips are like lilies, dropping sweet-smelling myrrh. His hands are as gold rings set with the beryl. His body or his belly is as bright ivory overlaid with sapphires. He's in good shape. He's attractive. He takes care of himself. His legs are as the pillars of marble, set up on sockets of fine gold. His countenance is as Lebanon, excellent as the cedars. His mouth is most sweet. Yea, he is altogether lovely. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. You want to know why I'm so attracted to him, why I can hardly wait to be with him, why I can hardly wait to see him? Here's why. And then she describes what attracts her to him. And it also has to do not just with appearance, but it has to do with his attitude, with his character, with his ability, with his accomplishments. You know, it says, verse 10, distinguished among 10,000, he stands out. He is my friend, verse 16. You know, that's something that a lot of thought ought to be given to in a happy marriage. Not only is this your wonderful husband, he ought to be your very best friend. Not only is this your beautiful wife, she ought to be your very best friend. And that's all a part of really a very, very close, dynamic, growing, full of love, happy marriage. And to take the analogy forward to Jesus Christ and the church, you can read where he says to his disciples, you are my friends, and I am your friend. And that was at a level above being a servant. Now, we also are his servants, yes. It's a special kind of friendship, but it's a type of servant that's also a friend, a close personal friend to Jesus Christ as well as his servant. And he is our friend, and he serves and takes care of us, but he's always over us, and we are subject to him. And there is authority in that relationship with Jesus Christ and the church, and he is the head of the church. There's authority in marriage, and the husband is the head of the house, but it's loving, and it's a cooperative kind of friendship and relationship in a happy marriage. But the husband has the authority to lead and to protect and to provide, and the wife supports that. Chapter 6 now, verse 1. Whither is thy beloved gone, O thou fairest among women? Whither is thy beloved turned aside, that we may seek him with you? This is a figurative thing where friends and neighbors are saying, where did he go? Let us help you find him. And she answers, verse 2, my beloved is gone down into his garden, to the beds of spices, to feed in the gardens and to gather lilies. I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. He feeds among the lilies. You are beautiful, O my love, as Tirzah, comely as Jerusalem, as beautiful as Jerusalem, terrible as an army with banners. Turn away your eyes from me, for they have overcome me. Your hair is as a flock of goats that appear from Gilead. Give me a little time, because I'm so attracted to you, sometimes it's almost overwhelming, is what's being said here in verse 5. In verse 4, it talks about as Tirzah. That was a beautiful city, the early capital of the northern kingdom of Israel, and really a beautiful place. So comparing her beauty to that beautiful city. Turn away your eyes from me, for they have overwhelmed me, is the meaning. Your hair is as a flock of goats that appear from Gilead, going down from Gilead. He's describing his wife. Your teeth as a flock of sheep which go up from the washing, whereof every one bears twins, and there is not one barren among them. As a piece of a pomegranate are your temples within your locks. There are 80 queens and 40 concubines and virgins without number. But none of them compare to you, is the meaning here. My dove, my undefiled, my perfect one, so to speak, my clean, pure, perfect one. Not that she was perfect in the ultimate sense, but beautiful and just right. My dove, my undefiled, is but one. She is the only one of her mother. She is the choice one of her that bare her. The daughter saw her and blessed her. Yea, the queens and the concubines, and they praised her. Very special. You ever told your wife how special she is? Have you ever told your husband how special he is? That should happen often. Verse 10, who is she that looks forth as the morning, fair as the moon, clear as the sun, and terrible as an army with banners? Or awesome as an army with banners. Striking, amazing, incredible, beautiful in every way. I went down into the garden of nuts to see the fruits of the valley and to see whether the vine flourished and the pomegranates budded. Or ever, or before I was even aware, my soul made me like the chariots of Amminadab, a prince ruling over myriads of people. She just makes me feel strong capable and confident. She strengthens me. Verse 13, return, return, O Shulamite, a young woman in the Middle East, Palestinian, a young Palestinian woman. Return, return, that we may look upon you. What will you see in the Shulamite? As it were, the company of two armies. Or here's what I'll see. I'll see strength and I'll see majesty and might. She's so beautiful, so strong, so special. These are descriptions. These are feelings expressed in words. These are verbal pictures being painted here of the love between a husband and a wife, two people in a strong and growing marriage. And it's done without embarrassment. It's done without reluctance. It's done because the love is so strong and so intense. And that's the kind of love that ought to be within any happy marriage, and especially in a Christian marriage. And it's that kind of intense love that is there between Jesus Christ and the members of his church and his church as a whole. And one of the great lessons that we can learn from reading this book, the Song of Solomon, is to, in the right way, at the right time, in the appropriate manner, express that love, that admiration, that respect, that strong attraction that is there between a loving husband and wife, and that must be there between Jesus Christ and his church. It's there from Christ. We have to make sure it's there from his church toward Christ. Now, chapter 7, how beautiful are your feet with shoes. There's another place in the Bible that says, how beautiful are the feet that bring the gospel. He's just saying that her feet are beautiful, but also her feet take her to him and bring her to him. So that's another part of that. Like it is where it says, how beautiful are the feet of those that bring the gospel. It's great to see him coming. How beautiful are your feet with shoes, O prince's daughter, or in sandals, with shoes or in sandals. The joints of your thighs are like jewels, the work of the hands of a cunning workman. Your navel is like a round goblet which wants not liquor. Your belly is like a heap of wheat set about with lilies. Your two breasts are like two young roes that are twins. Your neck is as a tower of ivory. Your eyes like the fish pools in Heshbon by the gate of Bethrabim. Your nose is the tower of Lebanon which looks toward Damascus. Your head upon you is like Carmel. Mount Carmel, and the hair of your head like purple, not that it was purple, but rich and deep. The king is held in the galleries. A better translation, held captive by your tresses, by the beauty of your hair. How fair and how pleasant are you, O love, for delights. Once again, taking time to in detail describe the beautiful attraction that the wife displays to her loving husband, and him telling her that, and doing so with sincerity and with kindness and with passion and meaning every word of it, and conveying that to his wife, and her conveying her attraction to him, her wonderful husband. And as we pray to God, we pray to the Father, but we can also briefly pray to Jesus Christ and convey this tremendous love we have and respect we have for him and his brilliance and his glory and his honor and his majesty and his might. And then read how he conveys his love toward us and how he protects us and heals us and provides for us and looks after us and cares for us. All of this is wrapped up in true, abiding, growing, intense, developing love between a husband and wife in marriage and among Christians and our Savior, Jesus Christ. And it's important to get the point here. And it's important to read this book, and it's important to learn from it and to grow in implementing it in our lives at the right time, in the right way, and in an appropriate manner. This book is all about love and expressing that love, and showing that love, and protecting and enriching that love that Christians should be filled with. Verse 6, how fair and how pleasant are you, O love, for delights. This thy stature is like to a palm tree, and thy breast to clusters of grapes. I said, I will go up to the palm tree, where I will take hold of the boughs thereof. Now also your breast shall be as clusters of the vine, and the smell of your nose as apples, or fragrance of your breath, really, is a better translation. And the roof of your mouth like the best wine for my beloved, that goes down sweetly, causing the lips of those that are asleep to speak, or moving gently or gliding over the lips of those that sleep. In other words, using physical descriptions of wonderful, pleasant things like food and drink, and applying it to the strong feelings that he has for her and her beauty and her appearance and her character and her attitude, and that she has for him and his appearance and his character and his attitude. That's what this is talking about here as we read through chapter 7. Talking about how that wine is so good, it'll even wake up somebody from a deep sleep to speak about it. So maybe he's in a deep sleep and he's dreaming about her and it's so intense and she's so beautiful, it makes him wake up and talk about it. Verse 10, she says, I am my beloved's and his desire is toward me. Come, my beloved, let us go forth into the field. Let us lodge in the villages. Let us be together. Let us experience travel. Let us experience life. Let us get up early to the vineyards. Let us see if the vine flourishes and is budding, whether the tender grape appears and the pomegranates bud forth. There will I give you my loves. There will we have a wonderful time together, affection and appreciation, and experience our time with each other with tremendous love and affection and with admiration for one another. Wherever we are, at home, out in a garden, up in a mountain, in a vineyard, that love is there, and sometimes it is expressed and talked about and shown because it's so strong, it can't be stopped, it can't be withheld. It just comes flowing out between us. That is a wonderful, exciting, happy, thrilling marriage, and everybody can have that kind of marriage if it's based on love and the laws of marriage are followed. And God is involved, and it's carefully cultivated like a beautiful garden, and it's expressed often one to the other in private and at the right time and in the right way. Verse 13, the mandrakes give a smell or fragrance, and at our gates are all manner of pleasant fruits, new and old, which I have laid up for you, O my beloved. Mandrakes were a plant considered from very early days to have aphrodisiac powers. Once again, having to do with intense feelings, even sexual feelings in private and based on love and not lust. Now chapter 8, verse 1. O thou that wert as my brother, such a close friend, like I'm like a sister to you in some ways, you're like a brother to me in some ways. But it goes beyond that. It's husband and wife. O thou that wert as my brother, that nursed the breast of my mother, when I should find you without, I would kiss you. Yea, I should not be despised. I would lead you and bring you into my mother's house, who would instruct me. I would cause you to drink of spiced wine of the juice of my pomegranate. His left hand should be under my head. His right hand should embrace me. Once again, there's kissing and hugging and all of that proper in a happy marriage. And often, I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, that you stir not up nor awake my love until he please. Leave him alone. Let him rest and don't interrupt our relationship. Who is this that comes up from the wilderness, leaning upon her beloved? I raised you up under the apple tree, or I awakened you under the apple tree. There your mother brought you forth. There she brought you forth that bare you. And so there's an extended family relationship here. And she's appreciating her husband, but also appreciating his mother. And he did the same toward her. And there's the extended family relationship that is so wonderful in a happy marriage. And it strengthens everybody in the family. The children, the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren, the grandparents, the parents. It's a wonderful thing. And it's all wrapped up in love. Just like within God's church, we have all kinds of people in God's church, all races and all ages, and it's all a happy family, led by the head of the family, the head of the church, the captain of our salvation, Jesus Christ. Love overflowing, and that's what you find here, and that's what this book is talking about. Verse 6, set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm. For love is strong as death, and it is. Jealousy is severe. It can be cruel and bring about cruel things. Jealousy is cruel as the grave. The coals thereof are coals of fire, which has a most vehement flame. And so we don't want to be jealous, and we don't want to allow situations to develop that will spawn jealousy, but rather faithfulness and fidelity and loyalty and complete love and togetherness in a family, in a marriage. Not giving any reason for jealousy and not falling into that horrible, corrosive, deadly, destructive attitude of jealousy. No place for that in a family, no place for that in a marriage, and no place for that in the church at all. It's cruel and it's deadly. Verse 7. Many waters cannot quench love, neither can the floods drown it out. If a man would give all the substance of his house for love, it would utterly be condemned. A better translation. If a man would give all the wealth of his house for love, it would utterly be despised. Not interested, don't want it. You can't buy my love. It's not for sale. And love is much stronger than any kind of possession you might have. When there's real love between two people in a marriage, husband and wife, nothing can trump that. Nothing will supersede that. You won't trade that for anything. You won't give that up for anything. It's there all the way to death if necessary. And the husband would die for the wife, and the wife would die for the husband in a loving relationship, like this book is talking about. And Jesus Christ died for his church, and his people will die for him before they'll forsake him. Same connection. That's how strong love is, if it's the real, genuine love that this book is talking about. Verse 8, we have a little sister. She has no breasts. What shall we do for our sister in the day when she shall be spoken for? She's growing up, and she hasn't reached that age where she starts to fully develop. So what's going to happen when it comes time for her to be married? Of course, that will all change by the time she comes of age to be married. But it's just a kind of thinking aloud verse here about how families look ahead and think about their children and what they will be like and how they are right now and how will they grow to do what they need to do then. And then they'll come to realize, well, if you do the right thing, they will grow to be what they ought to be later on. Verse 9, if she be a wall, we will build upon her a palace of silver. And if she be a door, we will enclose her with the boards of cedar. We're going to take care of her. And in every family where love is, they take care of one another. And the men especially take care of the women. And that's the way it should be. Verse 10, I am a wall and my breast like towers. Then was I in his eyes as one that found favor. So she did blossom forth and she did fully develop. And instead of not being able to find anyone that would be interested in her, she did find someone that was interested in her and who really had that right kind of love that she needed. And she had that for him. Then was I in his eyes as one that found favor, attraction, peace. Solomon had a vineyard at Baal Hamon. He let out the vineyard unto keepers. Every one for the fruit thereof was to bring 1,000 pieces of silver. My vineyard, which is mine, is before me. Thou, O Solomon, must have 1,000, and those that keep the fruit thereof, 200. Thou that dwellest in the gardens, the companions hearken to your voice. Cause me to hear it. So this is discussing the wealth and richness of Solomon and how he took care of it, and now he had others that would help to take care of the vineyard and the fruit and all that kind of thing. But it's comparing the wealth and the value of that to the love in a marriage and how much greater that is than all that he had in the way of wealth and possessions. Verse 12, my vineyard which is mine is before me. Thou, O Solomon, must have 1,000, and those that keep the fruit thereof, 200. Thou that dwells in the gardens, the companions hearken to thy voice. Cause me to hear it. Let's get together. Let's spend time together. Let's enjoy one another in our love and in our marriage. Verse 14, notice, you see this right throughout this book. It's almost like a thread that runs through this book. Make haste, come to me. I need you. I want you. I yearn for you. Let's meet and let's do things together. The husband says that to the wife. The wife says that to the husband. The church says that to Christ. Christ says that to the church. So we gather before him. We sing to him. We worship him. We glorify him. He leads us. He teaches us. He provides for us. Husbands and wives, they can hardly wait to get together. And there's no worship involved there, but there's admiration. And there's respect, and there's giving and serving and relishing in the company and in the activities that they can share together in life and in their wonderful marriage based on this intense love that we see expressed throughout this book. Verse 14, hurry up, please, hurry. Make haste, my beloved. Be thou like to a roe, a gazelle, or to a young hart upon the mountains of spices. Come quickly. I can hardly wait. I want to be with you. Please haste and be with me and let's be together and let's share our love in our wonderful and happy marriage. And we say that to Jesus Christ. We gather before him and let's share our love and teach us and help us and lead us, the church says to Jesus Christ in essence. And Christ says to the church, be of good cheer. I'll take care of you. I'll look after you. I will never leave you or forsake you. A direct analogy between the relationship of a husband and wife and the kind of marriage described in this book and Jesus Christ and his true church. Verse 14 concludes the Song of Solomon, but I want to finish this Bible study by turning to Revelation chapter 19 to once again underline and underscore the fact that the bigger lesson from this book, the Song of Solomon, has to do with the relationship of Jesus Christ and his church, full of love and full of tremendous respect and affection between Jesus Christ and his people. Notice here in Revelation chapter 19 and verse 7, let us be glad and rejoice and give honor to him, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife has made herself ready. And to her was granted that she should be arrayed in fine linen, clean and white, for the fine linen is the righteousness of the saints. And he says unto me, write, blessed are they which are called unto the marriage supper of the Lamb. And he said unto me, these are the true sayings of God. So there's the bigger lesson from the Song of Solomon. Yes, it's about tremendous love between a man and a woman, a husband and a wife, and a happy, vibrant, dynamic marriage. But a greater lesson to draw from this book of the Song of Solomon is that tremendous, close, personal relationship between Jesus Christ and his people and his church, which is all about dynamic, growing, intense, thriving, flourishing love of the highest order. So that concludes our study through the book of the Song of Solomon. This is Charles Bryce with the Enduring Church of God.